Hi, I'm Bill Maher, host of TV's Real Time on HBO, and you're listening to that pinko commie radio station, KFCF in Fresno.
This is the KFCF Community Calendar. You can always find the calendar online at www.kfcf.org with lots more information. Here are some highlights.
Saturday, June 28th, there will be an evening of magical fun and ice cream at the Selma Arts Center, 1935 High Street in Selma. A magic show for kids begins at 5 p.m. with an ice cream social following the show. Tickets are $10 and available at the Arts Center. Proceeds benefit the Selma Arts Center. For more information, go to selmaartscenter.com. Thursday, July 3rd, for the month of July, Gallery 25 member Sammy G will present a solo exhibit called Number 6. There will be an art hop Thursday, July 3rd from 5 to 9:30 p.m. In addition, there will be an artist reception on Saturday, July 19th from 6 to 10 p.m. Gallery 25 is at 660 Van Ness in downtown Fresno. For more information, go to gallery25.org.
To get your items listed on the KFCF Community Calendar, send them at least 2 weeks in advance to calendar@kfcf.org.
We sing the song of solidarity with freedom fighting defenders of dignity who use the truth as a shield. There is no bullet that can kill the truth when you defend it with reason. So let's join together to end this evil madness that we all call racism, both here and there.
Welcome, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good day. This is Ernesto Saavedra. I'm filling in for Pam Whalen here on Street Heat Radio. Today's show, we're going to be talking about some recent incidents involving the Fresno Police Department, community groups and individuals, and police shootings. Our guests today are Juan Avitia, known in the community as Ralphie, a member of the Fresno Brown Berets and current president of the Mexican American Political Association, or MAPA for short. And we also have Pastor Chris Breedlove of the College Community Congregational Church. And also joining us a little bit later will be Aurora Figueroa, mother of Martin Figueroa, a recent victim of a police shooting. So she'll be coming on a little bit later. So to start the program off, we're going to be talking about a recent PowerPoint that some community members came across, in which some specific people and groups were named. This PowerPoint was part of the Homeless Task Force led by the Fresno Police Department, and this was presented to a few community groups. And in that PowerPoint, come to find out that Pastor Chris Breedlove was labeled as the leader of the resistance movement against the displacement of homeless encampments. In particular, the resistance movement to stop the demolition of the Grand Silo homeless encampment, which happened in October of last year. Also, within that PowerPoint, the Fresno Brown Berets were labeled as the muscle of the resistance movement. So, I'm going to begin with you, Chris. So how did you hear about this, and what was your reaction?
Well, thanks for having me on the program today, and this is a critical issue that, homelessness in general, I think Fresno has been trying to get its mind around for the last several years. So October 23rd last year, there was a systematic effort by the Homeless Task Force and by the city administration to go into dismantle several homeless encampments, homeless communities. So homeless advocates, and all these homeless advocates are really a grassroots effort that come from everywhere. A lot of us overlap on other social justice matters, and we're familiar with each other, but We assembled together directly because of the encampments that were marked for destruction. And we wanted to make sure that people who were living there had dignity, had protection, had options, just to be a real advocate for those in those homeless communities. So the task force, they went across these various communities, dismantling and destroying them. And at the grain silo, several of us grassroots homeless advocates, we assembled. And we didn't really know what to expect that day. We didn't know where and when exactly city officials would come and start to dismantle and take apart this community. So we were there really observing early on and trying to be helpful as much as we could with people trying to collect their gatherings or trying to figure out what they were going to do next. So we were there just really witnessing. As the police were coming and city officials were coming, the task force, I should say, they were coming from several different angles. They were pretty determined to clean up things as quickly as possible that day. They weren't really interested in talking that day. They were on a mission.
Right.
And so what we did was we advocated for more time, for some dignity, to gather some things, yeah. People who were trying to move. So the homeless task force, they put Sergeant Dewey, he put together this PowerPoint. And the PowerPoint listed the Brown Berets. It listed myself specifically. Listed my church. And in my opinion, the way they listed us were very slanted caricatures and defaming to our reputations and totally misrepresentative of the spirit that was there.
Right. So what was your reaction to that? What? How did you feel about that?
So I was getting ready to preach on a Sunday morning, and some of the congregation members in our church are mental health professionals, advocates, and they were a part of a group that received a presentation from Sergeant Dewey. And so they said, "Pastor, did you know that your name, others' names were listed on this PowerPoint that the task force is circulating or are using for presentation?" I had no clue. And so she... the member of my congregation, she brought that printed out PowerPoint to the office the next day, and it was a very slanted description of what happened that day.
Right. So what impact, if at all, did this have for your work, for your congregation? How did that make you feel as far as, you know, hearing that you were being
right.
Specifically labeled out there
some kind of bad guy, bully out there.
Yeah.
Homelessness is a very complicated matter, a very heartbreaking matter. You know, I'm not going to pretend it's easy to solve or it's easy to prevent or, you know, it's easy to take care of. That's hard work. It's very difficult being homeless. I mean, the people who survive on the streets are... they have some enormous strength and perseverance. They're very frail. They can be very frail.
Yeah.
Living on the streets is a tough lot. So, you know, ministers and other advocates and advocates, they get out there and activists, they get out there and, they try to identify and raise awareness and bring dignity to the people that are homeless. Ministry is the same thing. It's a ministry of affirmation. So when people come into the church on Sundays, you're affirming who they are. You're celebrating the miracle of them being alive. It's the same thing when you're on the streets talking to people. I mean, the most important thing I can do as a minister, my skill set, is to affirm the dignity and worth of another person. And it's hard to help somebody navigate out of that system.
Right.
So to have your name smeared and disparaged with people that you need to work with, my training, my professional expertise isn't in social work, isn't in counseling. You know, I've learned a lot. I've learned how to refer people to help agencies. But if I need to work with mental health professionals, if your name is being disparaged out there in the community, or if Brown Beret organization is being disparaged out there, and we need to work with help agencies, then that creates an obstacle for people that are defamed like that.
Right. Definitely. Did this discourage you at all to continue doing that kind of work?
It should be disappointing and shocking that the police department, with all the authority that they have and the respect that they should be working on having with the community, it's discouraging that they would disparage somebody's name like that instead of trying to work with advocates and activists and community organizers. So we should be really, government agencies, community groups, we should be working together in collaboration to try to make Fresno better, especially for the most vulnerable here. So it's discouraging. You know, it hasn't dissuaded me to go out and to do what I do. In fact, if anything, the city actions toward homelessness here have exacerbated things. It's so much more complicated. It used to be that you could go to these homeless communities and you could keep track of people. But now it's folks are scattered. I see it in my neighborhood between Barstow and Bullard. So essentially the law is now, as best I understand it, if you're homeless, you can't stay in one spot on consecutive nights. You have to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reduced to a backpack of your own possessions. You're moving constantly. You're weary. And so it makes it hard for advocates that are trying to help the homeless keep track of where people are, because they get run off from place to place, or they get harassed by the task force or by other people. And so they're constantly moving. And that's the hardest thing. I've had a family that I was working on, and they were marginal. They had housing at the time, but at any moment they could easily be homeless. And they had two high school students, mom, dad, in and out of jobs, trying to find stable work. And I lost touch with them, you know, because they were so marginal. So once you're homeless on the streets, it's a dangerous predicament.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Do you know or are aware of what's happening currently, what the city is doing currently with homeless folks or the homeless encampments?
I think their main work right now, the task force, is trying to keep these homeless communities from sprouting back up.
Right.
So they're watching the locations by the Pavarella House. They're watching other places where in the past homeless communities have organized and became a community, and they're preventing that from happening. And now they have a recent crackdown on shopping carts, and so they're going after the shopping carts.
Yeah,
I have those shopping carts. They come through my neighborhood every once in a while, and it's interesting to meet the people behind the shopping carts. One person I met was probably second-generation Hmong, I'm thinking, if I remember right. And it was quite interesting to hear her story, to hear her parents' story. And she's out there collecting recyclables to make ends meet, to try to make ends meet.
Right.
So, you know, people are doing what they can to survive in a very hard, harsh reality.
Right.
Yeah.
Can't even push around shopping
carts. No. So, yeah, you have to have a backpack, and you have to always be constantly moving.
Yeah.
You know, don't find a shady place where you can call home for 2-3 days. You know, you can't stay there more than one evening. And you can't even stay there throughout a whole night. You know,
right.
So the police see you, and if you're visible, the homeless task force see you, they're going to keep you moving, you know, like cattle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's desperate. It's bleak.
Yeah, how unfortunate. Ralphie, so Fresno Brown Berets were labeled as the muscle in this PowerPoint. What were your thoughts when you first heard about this, and what was your reaction?
You know, and I'm not sure if you can hear me, but I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised, and I haven't been surprised by both. Either the Fresno Police Department, Chief Dyer, I wasn't surprised. They've done other things before in the past. I've lived here in Fresno long enough and been involved long enough to see people, you know, get, you know, their character gets, you know, smeared. And either Dewey, this officer, was reckless as a professional, negligent as a police officer, you know, putting up names and putting up group names and putting labels on them, or it was a mischievous attempt on his part to portray us, to demonize us, the Brown Berets, and even the pastor here, and to demonize us and divide us from our community. Because as activists, you know, we try hard to win the trust of the people, the community. And some people know about homeless advocates and the work that they do, but they don't know groups or individuals by names. Some people don't know about the Fresno Brown Berets or any other church who might be working in the community. Yet when you use words like muscle and you use these buzzwords, they're either intended to get people to side or to, you know, for red flags to start popping up. You know, that's pretty clever, wickedly clever, but clever, you know. And so I wasn't surprised, but at the same time, you know, it keeps me thinking that we're doing something right if they're going to those, you know, to that extent, you know, to try to disparage somebody. And I could live with that, but somebody else might not be able to live with that, and they're hurting the efforts to help the homeless. So, like I said, I wasn't surprised, but those were my thoughts.
Right. So what do you think this says about, you know, freedom of speech, freedom, you know, to organize and advocate? What are your thoughts around that? Kind of similar to what I asked Chris earlier, as far as, like, you know, what is this? Does this discourage people to go out there and advocate for folks? Or,
yeah,
you know, what
yeah.
does it say?
Oh, no, that definitely. You know me, I got a law degree, and I'm big on freedom of speech. But I've also, you know, noted that you only get the freedom that you're given by whoever controls. And in this case, you know, you got a mayor, you got the city council, a lot of them, you got a lot of big name and donors in the city, and the police department pretty much is going to work for that 1%, as we call it. Mm-hmm. And so for some of us who want to go out and fight, you know, against injustices, it's intimidating. There's some people who may have a record, somebody may have a child at home, and they don't want to lose their children. They don't want to get arrested or rearrested. Mm-hmm. And so it's intimidating, and it just makes our job just that much harder. Now, we got to be responsible, too, as activists, and not, you know, not get discouraged and go out and educate people about the rights that we do have and how better to use these rights. But it can be intimidating, especially because during the time when Fresno did get sued, they were, you know, the whole war tactical appearance with the tank. You know, when they go to the West Fresno and park a giant tank and the cops come out in fatigues, you know, camouflage, right, like they're fighting in Afghanistan or something. That's discouraging, and it's repressive, and people will see that and, you know, say, forget this, I don't want to get involved. I wouldn't be discouraged by this article or by this by what it was said in the article by the police officers, and I would tell people to continue fighting. And even though they can control some of what we know, the amount of free speech, quote unquote, that we do have, that doesn't mean that we can't continue to speak up and organize, because I think we have the tools, we have the connections, and pictures or words shouldn't disparage us. And I think a lot of us, you know, Pastor Red Love here, myself, yourself, and others, the mother sitting next to me who's lost a son to police shootings, we all know that when we come together as a group, there's power in numbers. So I would encourage people to continue fighting. Be smart about it, research, make connections, but remember those numbers will help. And I think that's part of why we did, you know, people did get their attention that day and other days mm-hmm. too when this happens, because they don't expect people to be out there. They just, you know, pick on the poor day, and then all of a sudden they see, you know, people out there they don't expect to see,
yeah.
And it changes their total plan for the day. Mm-hmm. So as far as free speech, we only got the amount of free speech that they allow us, but that doesn't mean that we can't work in other means, in other ways.
Right. Chris, do you have any thoughts around that?
No, I mean, we have to keep talking and advocating, because, you know, people don't have a voice. People that are marginalized and homeless, you know, we've and others that are victimized, you know, we've got to do our best to be their voice and representation of what how things should be different. So, you know, it is intimidating. You know, the thought, as my wife and I talk about this, and we say, you know, what happens if we somehow need help, if we need protection, or if we need intervention, and something's happening in our home, and we call the police and they dispatch, does it pull up on our name, show up, and then they say, you know, it's that cat who runs around with the muscles of the Brown Beret, you know, we take our time getting there. You know, so just because you take an oath to protect and serve society doesn't free you from bias and prejudice. And so freedom of speech and our persistence in raising awareness, we need to push back on that and challenge things like that.
Definitely. Just wanted to remind folks, you're listening to KFCF Fresno, 88.1 Street Heat Radio. So I wanted to go back just a little bit to close out this segment. I had a chance to, you know, come across this PowerPoint and read up a little bit about it. And I thought it was interesting that they weren't really public as far as who they were showing this to. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if any of you two had any insight as far as who they showed it to and why they only showed it to those folks.
You know, I can't remember, racking my brain trying to remember the group that first contacted me and let me know that PowerPoint was shared to. But when working with Mike Rhodes doing a story for Community Alliance or just doing the preliminary research, when he requested information, the PowerPoint is an information, public access, what they sent him was different than what they had disseminated to the professionals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I find that curious too, and I don't know, you know, if we had to be more specific in what the information we're requesting, but for me personally, in my opinion, this ends up a concern that, you know, they're altering public documents.
Yeah.
So if you did request the PowerPoint, you know, are you seeing the original piece that was disseminated to people in the public?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a press conference where they put that out there. From what I understand, it was a small group here, a small group there, that they printed out the PowerPoint and they shared among the people. But, you know, who's to say if you're at that gathering, you take that PowerPoint, you share with your realm of influence.
Right.
Somebody Xerox and makes a copy of that and starts, puts it online, digitizes it. You know, when something's printed out like that and then given to some to the public, it becomes it's out there, you mm-hmm. know, and it's being copied and reproduced and quoted and cited. And, you know, once you put that out there as a professional, you know, you're giving it to the world and, yeah. and the world has it. So, you know, that worries me.
Yeah, definitely. Ralphie?
You know, Mike Rhodes wrote the article, and I'm so glad he did, because he exposed an example of why people do not trust law enforcement in Fresno, at least people in the west side and the south side of town who at times fear calling law enforcement because of what may happen. You know, they call for help and end up losing a family member, or they call for help and they end up getting talked down to. But for them to be doing this, you know, on their own, for them to be doing this with specific people, you know, that's a perfect example of how they're not being transparent with us, not being honest with us. Yeah. At least it doesn't appear that way. And so it shouldn't surprise them when people don't trust them, especially because, you know, here you have a pastor, and I'm a high school teacher. You know, if we're the worst things that they're yeah. looking at, I mean, how are they treating people
right.
with maybe right. records, or maybe dropped out of high school, or maybe just don't speak English and immigrants to this country? Mm-hmm. You know, it shows you, is that the standard, that if they're going to go after us and disparage us this way, what do they do to others with less means or less education or less, you know, and right. that is what bothers me. And I'll get into it later, but the trust in the Fresno Police Department has been at a low for a long time. Dyer has really driven it to the ground with this kind of leadership, I would say, because, you know, he's the guy at the top, and when his men are doing this, I'm sure he's probably familiar or aware that something's going on like this. Then I say the reputation is going to continue to be low in the community as far as PD is concerned when things like this come out.
Yeah, definitely. So our guests for this first half of the show have been Pastor Chris Breedlove, Of the college congregational.
Well, they recently changed their name.
Oh, it's changed the name.
It's a lot easier now. It's Community United Church of Christ. Community UCC.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. There you go. Yeah, thank you. Definitely. And Ralphie Avitia with the Fresno Brown Berets, as well as the Mexican American Political Association. And we're talking about a PowerPoint that was circulating around in which Chris Breedlove was labeled as a leader of resistance movement against the demolition of homeless encampments, and the Fresno Brown Berets as the muscle of that resistance movement. We're going to go into a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Fresno Police Department and recent police shootings. Thank you.
Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa' una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar. Mi vida la dejé entre Ceuta y Gibraltar. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino por no llevar papel. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino, yo soy el quiebra ley. Mano negra clandestina, peruano clandestino, africano clandestino, marihuana ilegal. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Argelino clandestino, nigeriano clandestino, boliviano clandestino, mano negra ilegal.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Street Heat Radio. This is Ernesto Saavedra filling in for Pam Wayland for this last remaining 30 minutes or so of the show. We're going to be continue talking about the Fresno Police Department and their involvement with different individuals, community groups, and also more specifically around police shootings. Our guest for this segment will be Juan Avitia, better known as Ralphie in the community, and also Aurora Figueroa, who is the mother of Martin Figueroa, a recent victim of a police shooting that happened in May. Going to hear a little bit more about that a little bit later. So to start off, just to give us some context, so this past week, community activists and family members have been rallying and marching and protesting against police brutality, demanding that the Fresno Police Department be held accountable for recent shootings they deemed as unjust, and the Fresno Police Department adopt non-lethal methods when interacting with community members that may need mental health services, amongst other things, right? So, Ralphie, just start with you. So tell us a little bit more about what's been happening with these police shootings and why.
Well, two weeks ago, I got a call, and I got a notice from Irene Serrano. She is a member of the Fresno Brown Berets, and what happened was about 2.5 weeks ago, the Fresno Police Department responded to a call on the west side of Fresno on C Street. Two brothers were fighting. One was intoxicated. The thing, though, was that the police unloaded 17 bullets into one man who was holding a knife and was obviously mentally not all there. This is a crisis. We said something's got to be done. So the Fresno Brown Berets organized a rally at the Justice Corner on C Street in the West Side. And what we did that day was we met with family members, and a lot of shooting victims heard about this and came out, or family members of shooting victims, and they were outraged. They were people were upset because 17 bullets pumped into a man, and the story the police department had given, the initial story, is not what happened. We found that out on Monday after our meeting with Chief Dyer. Now, what happened was the community was really upset because we marched from a couple blocks to the shooting site, and then the community demanded that we do this again because we gotta, you know, make a complaint, do some sort of complaint to the city and let them know this is wrong. But the community said they wanted to do it at City Hall, and they wanted to call out the mayor because we didn't think Dyer would even meet with us. So we agreed. We went, and there was a couple groups and several, I would say about 100 people there on that Monday. It was a big rally. We drafted a letter with two basic demands. Number one was, in the case of shooting victims where it appears to be a mental health crisis, negotiators be brought in, regardless of cost or time. Mm-hmm. And number two, that less lethal approaches be taken to these kind of situations. Because 2 days after the shooting that happened on C Street, a man with a gun, who spoke English, by the way, the first victim didn't speak English, here in the Tower District, was holding a gun. The police, the SWAT team came out and for 5 hours stood there and negotiated, and sure enough, nobody was shot. Nobody was killed. So a lot of people were outraged for several reasons. It's not the first time that the Fresno Police Department has shot somebody. This has been going on under Jerry Dyer for years. We got 50-plus shootings under his command. Plus, you got several police officers who have more than one shooting victim or death on their hands, and they're still walking the beat, still patrolling the streets. And so to us, this is not new, but this latest incident was shocking. It shocks the conscience to hear that somebody is gunned down 17 bullets. Some of the things we learned also, and we brought to the attention after the Vargas shooting where they shot a man. Again, Dyer came out and said he was a gang member. They said he had a gun. No gun whatsoever. The guy was not an active gang member. He's a dad working. But what happened was the city got sued, and $1.2 million. But with that, an expert testified that the way they train cops is if they have to shoot, it's 3 shots, rest, observe, study the situation, and then 3 shots again if necessary. And we brought that to Dyer's attention and asked him, why was that not followed? Dyer admitted that he too has questions because 17 does seem excessive.
Right. So you mentioned a little earlier that how the incident was reported wasn't necessarily how it happened. Could you dig a little deeper into that? Like
the way it was reported on the Wednesday when that shooting occurred. It was a man who only spoke Spanish. He was a farm worker from Mexico. And he had a knife, yes, and he was coming out of the house. But it was reported that he was standing hovering above his own brother, about to kill him, saying, "Lord, forgive me for what I'm about to do," and that the cops had no, and the cops ordered him to drop down to the ground and to drop the knife, but he didn't comply, so they shot him. Well, Dyer admitted, and we know, because we actually went out and took pictures ourselves, that he was not hovering over his brother. His brother was several feet away from him, not in immediate, you know, reach of him. And then when they shot him, the witness, one of the witnesses says, the guy barely came out of the house with the knife, and that's when they shot him, and it wasn't even a few seconds. So the story didn't add up, and even Dyer admitted that that story wasn't correct. The first story, the initial story.
Wow, I wonder how many other
that's part of our wrong
incidents.
That's exactly why
misreported.
We've been protesting this for years, because the families never get a chance to speak. But the police department, Jerry Dyer specifically, goes on television, defends his police officers, tells a story, and then people say, "Oh yeah, that's a bad guy. Yeah, he should have been shot." And then the families are never allowed to tell their side of the story, or we never truly hear the other side of the story. And as a result, you know, the story, the narrative is controlled by the police department, and everybody says, "Oh yeah, they got it. They're doing a good job. They're doing a good job. Keep getting those bad guys."
Yeah, definitely. So I'm aware that, you know, you recently had a meeting with Jerry Dyer, you know, and you were accompanied by some family and friends of recent shooting victims. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about what happened in that meeting? I know it was with Jerry Dyer, Bruce Rudd, city manager of Fresno, and also the Office of Independent Review, right? Mm-hmm. Representative from that office. What happened in that meeting? What was going on?
We walked in, and along with Aurora here, she walked in with us, and basically we learned a few things, and we demanded a few things. Now, the meeting was controlled by us. We made sure that we control the narrative in this meeting. We called the meeting, so we wanted to make sure we had the questions. And one of the things that happened was, Dyer admitted that they're trying to do things differently. And throughout the meeting, he tried to apologize for things. He tried to inform us of different things that were being corrected. On the good side, we've been protesting the way they come out with the tanks. So he says they're getting rid of the fatigues and going back to traditional uniforms. So that was news. Today, on today's Channel 30, mm-hmm. ABC reported they're doing a big thing where Dyer himself is driving around talking about going back to community policing and building those relationships with people in the communities. And so I'm not sure if that's a direct result of our meeting, but that was exactly one of the things.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence. In addition, we learned that law enforcement in Fresno will now be carrying cameras, and these will be cameras that cannot be turned off and on at will. Because we questioned that. We said, well,
They will be carrying them?
They will be carrying cameras on them. Yeah. Just like the San Diego, I don't know if you know, San Diego Police Department got sued. There was an officer raping women, and now they're forced to carry these cameras. Officers don't like it, because now it keeps them honest.
Right.
It's a double-edged sword, because at the same time, we don't know if somebody gets, if somebody does commit a crime, obviously that's going to be evidence used against them. But on the positive note, it'll be recording what's going on, and they won't be able to turn it off and off and on at will. So there were some positives that came out of that. But one of the things that we did learn, and this is one of the most important things, as to one of our demands about negotiating, it doesn't look like Dyer is going to do that. And no police department, I understand, in the United States is going to tell their officers to negotiate. If they reasonably believe that their life is in danger, their first response is going to be to shoot. Now, I know that for a fact, because I've talked to a lot of these officers, and that they're not going to budge. It didn't sound like they're going to budge it there. The other thing was, as far as the independent auditor, we said we were not happy with it, because we fought for it, and it's like a dog with no teeth. He has no subpoena power, which means he can't get certain documents. He has to sit outside and wait till the department's done with their investigation. And so we said, what kind of auditor is this? It turned out that he is very independent. He himself admitted that he's better than the police department at investigating, but he's not given those powers. And when we pressed Dyer in the meeting, "Are you going to give him the powers?" He didn't agree to it. As a matter of fact, he's real reluctant and said that he had to talk to people. So it doesn't sound like he wants to give up more power to the auditor, because one of the things he did do, this is the second person to hold his job, is when he came in, He wrote a report specifically criticizing the Fresno Police Department for overly or excessive use of bullets during the police shootings.
Right.
So he criticized him, called him out, and we say he needs more powers. He needs more. That dog needs more teeth if it's going to be a real auditor and do its job.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, Aurora, tell us how you got involved. Tell us a little bit about Martin Figueroa.
My neighbor told me that they were going to have a rally, and I went to join in, and that's how I got involved with Ralphie, and I want to, you know, fight for my son and for mothers that they lose their family members.
Yeah.
I want some changes in the system. I want them to, you know, to do better with how could I say it?
The way they go about policing and supposedly serving the public.
Yeah.
Right. So could you tell us a little bit more about Martin Figueroa specifically? What happened with his case?
My son needed some assistance with psychological help.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter called the police, and we thought that we were going to get help, but we didn't. They shot him and they killed him.
Yeah.
And I'm very disappointed at the police.
Yeah.
I wish they would, you know, do something about it and do better things to solve the system.
Yeah. Yeah. How did that make you feel? Like, you know, you're calling the police, right, that are there to serve and protect. You know, your son's having psychological or mental health issues, but it turned out totally how you did not expect, right? How did that make you feel, and how do you view the police now? Like, you know, are you hesitant now to call the police, or what are your thoughts around that?
Well, my thoughts are that I definitely am not going to call the police no more. I rather work my problem,
yeah,
and try to avoid the police, because I don't want no blood. I don't want nobody to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't change the world, but I wish to have better help and better assistance with the police.
Yeah, definitely. And now that you're involved, which is very, very courageous of you to be involved, right? Because rarely do you see sometimes, you know, victims of police shootings being involved, because a lot of times, you know, they just want to stay out of the light. They just, you know, want to go on with their lives, kind of forget about it, move on. So what motivated you to get involved and to put yourself out there, especially, you know, I'm aware that you were in that meeting with Jerry Dyer, right?
Yeah, right.
Right there with the chief of police. You know, what motivated you, encouraged you to be out there and get involved?
My son. Yeah. My son gave me the courage, because I'm a quiet person.
Mm-hmm.
And my son motivated me to speak for him. I want justice, and I want I just want to speak for the people that they get shot. I don't want violence, and I want them to, you know.
Oh, no, you're doing right. You want justice, and you want to see, and you're right. Your son, her son, Aurora's son, may never come back. But I think that we're in the business of saving lives when we're out there protesting, because as Aurora said, she doesn't want to see violence. And if we can force the police department to change its tactics and its ways, and we could save a life or two in the community, You know what? That'll be very fulfilling because we know that, you know, somebody gets to live another day. And I'm totally in agreement with Aurora. I think the trust in the police has been lost. And that's one thing that we specifically told Dyer. And I opened up my meeting with him and I said, this is the lose-lose situation for us. Because, number one, we depend on police to protect and serve. Like Aurora was, you know, relying on them to come and help her. But then they come and they take a life. So now it's a lose-lose situation because, number one, we don't have the police there. And now, number two, we fear calling them because of we may see violence, like Aurora was saying. And we told that to him directly. We said it's a lose-lose situation. Mm-hmm. Something's got to happen. And I think Aurora, people don't know this, in that meeting, Aurora had the best words to Jerry Dyer and sitting right across from him, telling him, I trusted the police. She said, I will always regret calling the police. And Dyer shed, you know, he shed a tear. You could hear a pin drop. There was no, there was just silent during that moment. But I think it touched Dyer hearing it from a mother, which is rare, very rare.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful because, you know, they see activists like Ralphie out there all the time, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes from mothers like yourself and other community members that aren't necessarily out there like that, you know, causing a ruckus, like some say. You know, it's very, very powerful, and I commend you on that. You know, it's very, very powerful. Have you connected with any other family members of any other shooting victims? If so, how have been your connections with them and or conversations with them?
I spoke with those families that was shot 17 times, but I haven't connected with more, but I'm willing to maintain occupied so I could help other people or make a like a club to help people like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to get help and fight mm-hmm. our demands and our rights.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And actually, Aurora just mentioned something that I was discussing earlier with Gloria Hernandez, who was also instrumental in making this happen. And that was that the parents and family members form an organization. We call it No More Stolen Lives or Stolen Lives because we believe that the lives were stolen from us. And statewide, nationwide, there's different families and parent groups that get together and they travel and they assist each other. And what's interesting, and Aurora points this out because she was in there with another mother, a mother of a Hmong individual who was shot also and killed. And the language is a barrier, but what unites them is a sad experience. But what she just suggested is something we were discussing earlier, so that is something that may come about. So I will be talking to different families about that and getting them together and on an ongoing basis where they can continue to meet and empower them to take be active like Aurora has become active.
Yeah, what would you say has been the reaction of the community and also just friends and family members? Because I know sometimes, you know, it might cause divisions within families and friends. You know, some folks don't agree with what folks are doing. Some folks do. You know, could you speak on that, Aurora? And then Ralphie, if you have anything to add.
Well, it is kind of hard for some families because some families, you know, they're living their how do you say their
lives.
When you lose somebody, how do you say coming? Their grief.
They're grieving.
And they get upset because we try to call the police and they're mad because they think it's somebody's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. I know it's not right, you know, to.
You know, and what I think Aurora is getting at too is that it's there's even divisions amongst the families because some people blame, some people start pointing fingers, some people, mm-hmm. you know, it's grieving, but frustration as well. This frustration amongst different family members. So I can imagine it's very difficult for anybody going through this, and family members disagreeing, because then there's that division even amongst the family. And this is what we're telling Jerry Dyer, is these kind of shootings, especially when they shock the conscience, you know, 17 bullets or or when a parent calls for help, these kind of shootings, they don't just impact one family. It trickles down to the rest of the community, because now cousins and friends and people are pointing fingers like, well, if you want to call the cops or, you know, when that happens, now you got a whole community torn and nobody likes it. I mean, it's a whole community that's been poisoned by one incident that could possibly been avoided with simple, or maybe, you know, maybe not so simple, but negotiations. Yeah. Psychological help, something such as a negotiator who might be trained in mental health negotiation to help this person prevent a situation like what happened to Aurora.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You have anything else to add with that, Aurora?
I'm okay.
You're okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. I know. It's very powerful for you to be here. I know it might be tough. But again, it's very, very powerful. So what's the next steps? Are there any actions coming up, any rallies, anything? Or is there another meeting with the city manager or Chief Dyer?
Yeah, they promised that they'd get back to us for a meeting for 2 to 3 weeks from now. So we're waiting to hear from them. And then also, I think what we're going to be doing in the meantime and even afterwards is meeting with different families and trying to create that group I referred to. That way it's an organized group where people know that they can get support. Because one thing people don't know is that this meeting we have with Jerry Dyer, you know, three big powerful people in the city within, you know, so many hours, you know, they got back to us. Is that when we went up to the second floor, we went to the mayor's office. In that lobby, families such as Aurora and the children and grandmothers as old as 92, they refused to move. And when they threatened us with the rest, people were not going to go anywhere. And I'm sitting there, you know, a radical from college days, you know, involved today. And I'm watching the community say, no, we're not going anywhere. And I'm like, well, I guess we're not going anywhere today. We're getting arrested.
Yeah.
I was so proud of the parents and the families that they refused to budge. And that was them doing it. And I think those kind of actions, we need to meet and recognize that those kind of approaches and recognize the family's courage, because this is what we call empowerment. You sometimes learn through experience, through doing. And that day we did something in order, and the families made something happen.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing Jerry Dyer on TV today talking about this new tactic of policing, I'm thinking it is a direct result of what Aurora and the families did that day by refusing to leave that office. So we will be meeting within 2-3 weeks. We are going to be communicating with other groups as well. We definitely want to include as many people as possible interest, because even though this was like it just happened, it spurred, and it was organic in many ways, we want to include as many people as possible before the meeting comes up in 2 or 3 weeks.
Right, definitely. And that meeting coming up, is it open to the public, or is it just for folks directly involved in this incident?
I think Dyer wants to limit it, because that's one thing he told us, is he doesn't like the whole large crowd meeting because people start yelling, et cetera, et cetera. And we did, both sides did agree not to have TV cameras in there, because sometimes people play to the cameras. We want to be straightforward, no nonsense. So if the room is big enough, I'd like to request more people to be in there, because I'd like to have some of the parents in there and other groups who weren't represented. And so hopefully we'll have it in a bigger room, but also more interest represented at that meeting.
Could you name some other groups that you're in touch with, some other folks in the community? I know one of the actions I saw, Reverend Floyd Harris very known community activist here in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
He was out there at one of the rallies and marches. Other folks you're trying to connect with?
Yeah, Reverend Floyd Harris from the National Network in Action. Also, Summer Vu. She represented the Hmong community and actually provided us with a parent, a Hmong-speaking parent whose son was killed. We also have some advocates, like we're talking earlier about homelessness. We have advocates for the homeless and the mentally ill. And that's another thing, because that's a big part of it, is the mentally ill. And then we also have a lot of gay and lesbian communities who get forgotten because they get harassed as well. So we have some of those, not organized groups, but I would definitely like to include more.
Mm-hmm. So if folks want to get involved or learn more about this incident, where should they go or who should they contact?
They could contact myself. You could find me on Facebook. You can also, MAPA also has a website. But also, they can come to the Brown Braid meetings, which are located at the CFJ offices here on Wishon in the Tower District. I don't know the address right away.
946 North Fulton.
946 North Fulton. Yeah. So we meet every Friday from 6 to 8. They're welcome to come to our meetings. It's open to the public. You know, it's a hate-free zone, so we invite people as long as they come with good attention and love. Hey, come on in. And they can learn more about what our plans are. But in the meantime, we also will, they can have my number. If I can give it out, I'll give that out. Or my email, they can get a hold of me.
Yeah, yeah, if you don't want.
My area code is 559-977-4247, and if you leave a number, a message, I will respond. If you don't, I can't respond. So definitely get a hold of us if you want to work with us.
Great. Aurora, any last thoughts, a message you want to send out to listeners out there?
I just want to, you know, have the courage to go on, and I want to get more involved with the situation, and I want to, you know, I want to grow as a parent and yeah. and fight for parents that they're like myself, mm-hmm. and I just want to, you know, go forward.
Definitely powerful. Yeah. Yeah. Ralphie, any last thoughts, message?
Just that I'm so proud of the community, the way they rose up after the shooting. I think everybody was just shocked by what happened, and to me it proves that sometimes change may not come overnight, and sometimes it seems like it's taking forever, but change does come, and especially when the community rises up in a way, it's really, you know, that's a proud moment to watch the people rally.
Right, change does come. Well, thank you both so much for hanging out with us today. Really appreciate it. Folks, you have been listening to KFCF Fresno 88.1 Street Heat. We've been talking about the Fresno Police Department and their involvement with different community groups, as well as specific individuals regarding homeless encampments, as well as police shootings. All this is actually covered in the July issue of the Community Alliance, which is coming out soon. So make sure you pick up a copy. Check that out. You could also visit the website, FresnoAlliance.com. And yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And that's it for the show. Thank you so much, folks. Take care. Have a good night.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
You preach a man, don't tell me. Heaven is under the earth. You are dopey and you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold, and half the story has never been told. So now we see the light. We gonna stand up for our rights. Come on,
get up, stand up.
Brothers,
stand up for your rights.
Come on,
get up, stand up,
sisters,
don't give up the fight.
I'm begging you to
get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up,
I said don't give up the fight. Cause you know most people think a great God will come from the skies and take away. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours right here on earth. And now we see the light. We go.
stand up. Stand up for your rights. Don't let them hold you down. Get up, stand up. Don't give up to the fight. Sick and tired of this game of technology. Humbly asking Jesus for his mercy. We know and we understand. Almighty Jah is a living man. You fool some people sometimes.